At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
So Karen Reed, we got an interesting segment we're going to do today. We're going to take a look at the testimony from the mother of John O'Keefe. This is the prosecution's witness that called her up to testify today. You've seen this. I have not. Mm-hmm. What should I be bracing for?
Do you have any tissue, any Kleenex nearby? Because it gets a little bit emotional, okay. As it should.
Yeah.
This woman has endured a lot. Her family has endured a lot, not just the death of John O'Keefe, but their daughter. So they have three. They had three kids. They now have one. And this is an elderly woman. She talks about how on the stand she's been married for 53 years. She's not a spring chicken. And a portion of her family is gone.
Yeah.
She's been through a lot in the last couple of years. It's a lot.
Let's take a look at her testimony here. In the trial of Karen Reed on day number two.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brennan.
Could you kindly introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Margaret O'Keefe. I am John O'Keefe's mother.
Are you married?
Yes.
Who are you married to?
John O'Keefe Jr.
How long have you been married for?
Too long. 53 years.
I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't hear you.
53. Long enough?
She's fiery.
How long have you lived in the area?
We moved to Canton 3 years ago.
Before you moved to Canton 3 years ago, where did you live?
Braintree.
How long had you lived in Braintree for?
50 years.
Did you begin your family in Braintree?
No, we lived in Mattapan first, and that's where my daughter was born, and then we moved to Braintree.
Your daughter was born when you were in Mattapan?
Mm-hmm.
Your daughter's name?
Kristen.
How many children did you have?
Three.
You, Kristen, and John?
And Paul.
Is Paul the youngest, the baby?
The baby.
Did you raise your children, how long were you in Mattapan before you moved closer to here?
I'm sorry, repeat that?
How long did you live in Mattapan before you moved closer?
2 years.
And then the rest of the time you were in the area?
In Braintree.
Tell me a little bit about your immediate family.
My daughter.
And now the emotions begin.
This is the daughter who died.
My daughter, Kristen, had a...
He took the kids.
A tumor, a cancerous tumor that she had for 5 months. And she died in November 13. She had two children. And then 2 months after she passed, Her husband passed from a heart attack. And then you all know about John. And then my son Paul is
over there.
That was 2013, ma'am? Could I ask you about her children?
She had two children, Kaylee, who's now 17, and Patrick is 14. And he's a rent for my money.
She is fired. Do you remember how old the children were when your daughter passed?
3 and 6.
When that happened, was there any plan for the children?
As far as?
Well, what was going to happen with the children?
When she passed?
Yes, ma'am.
And when he passed?
Yes, ma'am.
My son decided to be the head guardian, and then we had, I was the other guardian, and there was Steve's brother and sister were the other two guardians. There's four of us.
May I approach you just the microphone?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Talking too soft? Okay.
Did I understand that there was a decision that John would be the primary guardian? Can you share with us how that decision came about?
Well, he was single. The other two guardians were married, and they didn't have children, but he decided to do it himself, and then I was the second one in case he needed me. So I was over there most of the time, like when the kids get home from school or, you know, take them places, and then have them on weekends so he could have a break. So that's what I did.
Did other people help out in addition to you and John?
Yes, my husband was there, and Paul and Erin were there, and the other members of Steve's family.
I understand at some point John worked in law enforcement?
Yes.
Besides that, could you just share just a little bit about him with us?
He was a police officer at headquarters. And before, when he first started, he was in High Park, and then he moved to Dorchester, and then into Boston itself, and that's what he did.
I was hoping if you could tell us a little bit about John besides his work.
He was enthusiastic with sports. He was wonderful with the kids. He took care of them and did everything for them. Take them places on vacations and everything. He was their number one, and they called him JJ.
Would you mind if I showed you a photograph?
No.
May I approach?
Yes.
Showing you a photograph.
Okay.
And can you tell us what you see?
That's my son.
Thank you. May I introduce this as an exhibit?
Yes. Really tugging at her emotions right now.
With the court's permission, I'd like to publish.
Yes.
Ms. O'Keefe, do you know when this picture was taken?
Oh, I really don't know. It was in the summer of I don't know what year. I really don't know the year. But is that one? He probably took him to a fair or an amusement park, and he had his picture taken there with it. And then the kids were with him, too. So,
do you know how old he was in that picture?
43, maybe.
What year was John born?
75.
Ms. Gilman, could you take the photo down, please? How old was John when he passed?
45. My mind's not working right now.
I understand. It's okay. Can I ask you a few more questions? Okay. Let me know. I want to go back to the morning of January 29th, 2022. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Were you home?
I was home in Braintree.
In Braintree?
Mm-hmm.
Who were you with?
My husband.
Did you receive a phone call?
Yes, from Carrie Roberts. It was about 6:15, between 6:15 and 6:30 in the morning.
Did you know Carrie Roberts?
Yes.
How did you know her?
She lived in Braintree for a while. John and her were friends. They went to the junior prom together. And then we found out that she moved. She lived in Canton, and she was around the corner from us, and she helped us out with the kids.
And when you were helping take care of the kids, would you often see Miss Roberts?
Yeah, because she'd take Patrick and her son Ryan places. And, yeah, so I saw her all the time.
Often?
Yeah.
When she called you that morning, do you remember the conversation?
Yeah, she said John was found in a snowbank. And I didn't understand, which I said, what do you mean found in a snowbank? She said, they found him in the snow. They don't know what happened. She says he's brought up to the Good Samaritan Hospital.
So she says, I'm going to come get you and Papa because I don't want you driving. And I says,
we can drive there. We both have four-wheel drives. And she says, no, I'm coming. So she came to get us. And it took a while to get there because the snow was bad. And in the meantime, I had called one of my nieces to find out because one of my other nieces worked at the Good Samaritan. I just wanted to know if she could find out anything about it. And I just couldn't get a hold of her. So when we get up there, they told us to sit in this room, and they would bring us down shortly. So finally they said, okay, you can go down. So we started walking down the corridor, and as I'm walking down, I hear Karen Reed yell, Peg, is he dead? Is he dead, Peg? Peg, is he dead?
You're really painting Karen as heartless
and
here.
Walking, and then I asked, I don't know who it was, a nurse or a worker at the hospital, and I said, what is she doing here? And she says, oh, she's being psych-evaluated. So then they brought us down to the room where my son was. He's bruised up, his eyes were closed. It's just not a good scene.
Okay. I'd like to go back, if I may.
Okay.
May I?
Yeah.
When Carrie Roberts picked you up in the car, did anybody go with you and Miss Roberts on the drive from your home in Braintree to Good Samaritan Hospital?
No, we were the only three in the car.
Who was the third person?
My husband.
During the drive to Good Samaritan Hospital that morning,
yep.
Did you ever have a chance while you were in the car to speak to the defendant?
Yes.
Please tell the jury about that conversation.
I asked her what happened. And she said, we went to a party. I left him there. I said, you just left him there? She said, yes, I just left him there.
Did she say whether she left him inside or outside?
No, she just said, I left him there.
Did she tell you whether or not she left him in the driveway or the street?
She just said, no, I just left him there.
You told us that when you got into Good Samaritan Hospital, you were walking down the hallway and you had another interaction with the defendant.
Yes.
And you told us that she was asking if he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe a little bit where in the hospital you had this interaction with her?
When they took us down to the emergency room, the doors open, and there was a corridor to go down to the other rooms, and she was on the left-hand side, and that's when she saw me come in, and that's when she started yelling, "Is he dead, Peg? Is he dead, Peg?"
So when she was yelling, could you describe her mood or demeanor? Was she animated?
She's loud, and I don't know. She was just loud, and as she was saying it.
And when she was asking you, "Is he dead? Is he dead?" Did you again ask her a question?
I just asked the nurse, "What is she doing here?"
Okay. And did you speak to Miss Reed herself?
No. No.
At some point, and you and your husband got to see John?
Yes.
Paul, and were you with Carrie at some point?
Carrie was there, and then my son Paul was there.
How did you get home?
I think I went home with Paul, and I think my husband went home with Carrie. We went back to Canton at the time.
Do you remember generally the time frame? Was it morning, afternoon, evening?
No, it was morning.
Do you remember getting home that day?
Yeah. It was snowy, icy.
Was anybody home when you got back?
No, it was just us. And then the kids started coming home. And that's when I was trying to, you know, take care of them. And then there was a knock at the door. And it was Karen, her father, and her brother asked if they could come in. And I was just trying to calm the kids because Patrick was just out of control, yelling. And then they came in. And then he said, "Do you mind if we go upstairs and get a couple of her things?" Which I never should have let them go up there. But at the time, it was, I just couldn't think straight. And I really didn't have anybody else to help me keep them down in the kitchen. So I don't know what they got up there, what they did up there.
How long were they, when you say upstairs, do you know what room they went to?
I assume the bedroom.
So I'm going to strike that. This is okay. If you could just, what you actually know. Okay, and Mr. Brennan can ask a better question.
Thank you. Could I lead a bit?
Yes.
Ma'am, how many rooms are upstairs in John's home?
One, two, three, four bedrooms and an office. And off the master bedroom, there's a bathroom, and then there's a closet. It's a big house.
Did you see the defendant and her father go upstairs?
I didn't really see them go up, but I knew they were up there because I could hear them.
You didn't follow them up or go to look?
No.
You didn't know which room or rooms they were in?
No, I'm assuming the bathroom and the master bedroom.
My question was poor. You didn't see which rooms they actually went in?
No.
How long was the defendant upstairs in John's home with her father?
I don't know, maybe 10, 15 minutes.
Did you see them come back down?
No, I did not.
When they were upstairs, what were you doing?
I was trying to calm the kids.
Both of them?
But yeah, well, mainly Patrick.
How was Patrick reacting?
He was very upset once we told him, because he slept over a friend's house the night before. And he just said, "I'll never see him again." I'm sorry.
Would you like a moment?
Mrs. O'Keefe, would you like to take a short break?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
You can just let me know when you're ready. Take your time.
Okay, go ahead.
You ready?
Go ahead.
Okay. That morning, when the defendant and her father came into your home, did you personally interact with the defendant?
Nope.
Was there any hugs, condolences?
By that point, remember, she herself...
Did you ever confront the defendant with any accusations when she was in your home that morning?
I don't even remember her being in the house. When she went upstairs, that's the last I saw of her.
Did you ever lean over a kitchen island? Do you have a kitchen island in your house?
No.
Did you ever lean over the kitchen island and say, I think he looks like he got hit by a car?
No. I don't remember talking to her that morning.
Did you see when she left?
Nope.
Did you ever see her Lexus in the driveway?
Nope.
That's how they're going to introduce a lot of the video clips.
Yep.
The children.
You got it.
Who's their guardian and custodian now?
Well, there's still four of us. Four of us.
Where do they live?
One in Boston, one in Stoughton, and Paul's in Bridgewater, and me.
Where do the children live?
With me. In Canton.
They live with you full time?
Yes.
You're their primary caretaker?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, just
Karen Reed team huddling together right now.
Having a little chat.
Now they're going to do, they just put their arms in the middle and said, go team!
Pretty much.
There you go. Alan Jackson has been recruited to the stand.
This part kind of shocked me. Wasn't expecting this.
Then they were all discussing whether or not they should do anything with her.
Yeah.
This is O'Keefe. I'm very, very sorry for your loss. I have no questions for you.
Mic drop.
You're all set.
Thank you.
I mean, it's all theater. That's, you know.
It is. It is. But I don't know what they could have really asked her, because it gets a little sticky coming up after this, because they are going to show, where they're trying to show, the judge tomorrow morning. So when this airs, the judge will be giving a decision on a piece of video from one of Karen's her docuseries, mm-hmm. where she mentions that Mrs. O'Keefe leans over and says, he looks like he's been hit by a car, you know, but she says it in the Karen Reed voice, which sounds very brash, very, Eastern United States with the accent and uncaring, and it just doesn't come across as very good. They ended up removing the jury so they could discuss this video segment. And I don't know what the judge is going to rule. When we air, she will have made a decision on that piece of video. But I think it's very damning.
Here is that video. If you want to see exactly what it...
And his mother leans over the kitchen island and says to me, I think he looks like he got hit by a car. He looks like he got hit by a car. I'm like, wait a minute. Were you both looking at the same body?
Yeah.
Ouch. It feels very unfeeling. You're talking to the mother of a deceased man. She a little compassion would be great.
I don't think she's capable.
And that's where the jury is going to come in and go either.
It doesn't make you a killer, though, either.
No, it doesn't. But people are human, and she seems really freaking cold here.
Yeah, she does seem like the ice queen, but doesn't make you a killer. I mean,
no.
if you don't have empathy for others, and you're pretty much, you know, your brain is just going to do anything you need to protect yourself. Others be damned. This is what you would do. I mean, this is the playbook. This is exactly what you would do.
Well, and again,
I'm not saying she doesn't have those things, but I don't know. I mean, just judging by what we've seen, it's like, God.
From a human perspective, so she's in the house and she testified to this fact, at least in the series, that she was in the house the morning that John died. To not hug the mom or give any condolences or to seem upset, like, oh my God, I can't process what's happened. Anything, just an interaction with the parents. You know, they're there. You know they're there.
Here's what I've been saying for a while now. It feels like emotionally she's handling this like a breakup. Not a death.
Yeah, like, let me go get my stuff.
Can I go get my stuff from his room? I can't even do the accent, but...
Let me go get his stuff from the room. No, yeah, that's some other accent. Yeah, that's like Romanian or something. But let me go to the car.
Yeah, and get his stuff in his room. Not, yeah.
Yeah, it does feel like a breakup.
It does. Like, especially... But it's on such a grander scale. But if you're playing the narcissist playbook here... Where everybody, you had to flip the script. You're the victim. You're also the hero, the grandiose hero in this tale. And you're the one that's being accused of possibly hitting your boyfriend. And again, I don't know that she did. But this, the playbook of how they're running this, how she's running this, is it's straight out of the narcissist playbook. I mean, it just is. And that's why I'm not surprised by any of this. It's like, okay, once you get this is what's behind that, there you go. And I don't know if she is. I'm just saying that's what it really looks like because all of the behaviors are lining up.
I'm not sure it's useful to for her team. And I'm not an attorney, but I, from an emotional standpoint as a human and somebody who could be on a jury at some point, the level of coldness and I don't fucking care, basically, is how she's coming off.
Yeah.
This is her boyfriend. Even if you had a fight, even if you thought that he was cheating on you and you saw his phone and there were a bunch of text messages from some chick.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you the right to be this fucking cold when his dead body is sitting at a hospital right now.
Yeah.
Show something, anything. Your life's about to change. His life changed. His parents' lives, the kids, everybody's lives changed. Show something. You've got anger. Why don't you have empathy and compassion and sadness? I mean, if nothing else, you narcissistic queen, you don't have anybody to hang out with on Friday nights now. I mean, at the very minimum level, where is your emotion?
Again.
I know. I'm just stunned by it. I've known some very narcissistic people. This is a new level.
I've seen it. It's spooky. That's really, I mean, we'll just take a look at this, you know, quick. I mean, she goes from this.
I said, could I have hit him? Did I hit him?
How could that have been? I mean, you dropped him off at the house.
I don't know what else could have been. It was howling wind. I had YouTube blasting on the stereo. And I thought, did he somehow try to flag me down, which was the reaction I was hoping to garner as I slowly pulled away from the house? Did he come out and maybe trip or bend over to pick up his cell phone and I ran over his foot and then he passed out drunk? I mean, I didn't think I hit him, but could I have clipped him? Could I have tagged him in the knee and incapacitated him?
To this.
Okay.
I remember everything. I said, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? I mean, I'm not as clear as I would be if I hadn't been drinking. I mean, I had drank, so, and that led me to question, like, could I have hit him? Did I run over his foot or hit him in the knee? Did I incapacitate him?
That wasn't the one I was looking for. There's one where she's basically saying, or she says, I remember everything. Or she did say, I remember everything at the beginning. So she did hit it. Yeah.
I remember everything. I said, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? I mean, I'm not as...
Yeah, was the remembering everything. I remember everything. And then she proceeds to say how she doesn't remember everything.
Oh, there's a lot going on there.
She's just a ball of contradiction.
Well, I don't think she knows.
That's the thing. She probably doesn't. The original story is probably the most accurate. She doesn't remember. She doesn't remember dropping him off. And, you know, and memory gets filled in, and maybe there's some small recollection of being over at that house, but to go from I don't remember anything to I remember everything, you know, it's just not the same thing. And, yeah. Again, none of it makes her a killer.
No, it doesn't. It makes her somebody you might not want to be hanging out with on weekends.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I've known people like this.
Very reckless.
You just need to distance yourself from people like this.
And that's, I think at the end of the day, that's what it is. I don't think you're going to be able to prove that. I don't think you can prove any of the counts, actually. I think there's too much shadiness in the air of all of this entire damn trial. So I don't think you can prove it. I don't think that she should be convicted at the end of the day in this. I'm not free Karen Reed. I'm just pro reality. You don't have enough evidence.
Justice. I don't know that they've got enough evidence. You have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that she killed this man.
No. And I don't know that you can. And the statements that she makes, she's flaky. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, does she think she probably could? That's clearly what her initial reaction is to this. Her visceral reaction is that. Does it mean that she did it, or does it just mean she's like, oh shit, like maybe I did? Like, that's the only thing that seems to make sense to me. I could not have done it at all, because that would be quite a burden to bear. And especially when you're being charged with this, so you don't want to say, yeah, I did it. If you don't want to go with, you know, more charges. But it's insane that she's being charged with second degree murder. I don't think you can convict her on it.
Well, and the other thing is, I'm guessing this is not the first time that she's had some blackout drunk episodes where she doesn't remember things. So all of it could be coming forth that, you know, ooh, she almost clipped somebody one night.
Yeah, I mean, this is not anything. Well, first, she doesn't remember, so she's pretty much blackout to, like, she remembers every damn detail. So, but again, doesn't prove that she killed him or hit him, because we just don't have those pieces. And we have a lot of evidence of shadiness going on over with the police department. Correct. So it's just, if the police department was just completely stand up and they did everything by the book and they weren't, like, talking about her ass and how, you know, they're going to, you know, she's going to fry and all that shit. And then they do all these weird things like throwing their phones away in dumpsters and shit.
Right.
On military bases. Nobody does that. And then and purposely breaking up SIM cards and shit. Like, what are you doing?
Why would you do that? Unless you had something to hide.
Well, and then he goes, well, my mind goes to, does it have anything to do with this case, though? Or is it just other shit that's going on in these departments where it's like, you know, it could be completely unrelated, but shady.
It could be Birchmore.
But, well, yeah, that or I don't know. I mean, that certainly is what comes to my mind. But what else is out there within these departments that's shady as hell that nobody even knows about? Because they did get away with stuff.
Yeah.
So I think you got that. So I know she's fighting for her life. And, you know, someone with these sort of personality traits that, I mean, that's what I get out of it, but I'm not a doctor. She's running the table exactly how that person would. But again, doesn't make her a murderer. And the thing that I think could get her convicted is all of this shit. All of the things she said, all the things in that doc. It shouldn't, but I think it could. She just added far more weight to herself when she's already struggling to swim.
I don't understand why she was allowed to do these. If the case had already come back, she's deemed not guilty, she's out, she's free, she's not going to be tried again, fine, go sit down with Dateline or whoever you're sitting down with. That's fine. But the trial, the second trial, was still coming. Why Why was this allowed?
Gets a lot of publicity. Alan Jackson, I'm sure, loves the publicity.
It's great for him. It's not great for his client.
I don't know. I mean, I think you can argue both ways on it, honestly, because you got this huge crew of people that are very pro Karen Reed and very outspoken. And you only kind of get that when she's out there talking. The problem is the things that she's saying are insane. If she was different about this, I think he'd have I don't know what you would say there. That's why he'd just be quiet in situations like this.
They've got a lot of cleanup work to do just from her talking, not even having to do with the case, just these interviews. They're going to have to clean it up, because if the prosecution is smart, they are going to have evidence and clips from this just lined up to make her look like a freaking monster.
They got it all. I mean, right before this week started, I went through all the interviews, and my whole screen over here is Karen Reed short clips where it's like 5, 10, 15 seconds of, I mean, that's how I was able to grab that one so quickly, because I already had it ready to go. Because there's just so much contradiction. It's like, especially when I literally broke down all of the clips, just her speaking in throughout that doc. It's mind numbing. It's like, she says one thing here, completely opposite there.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell?
Well, and again, you know, is somebody who drinks that much, and I've known some people who drinking is part of their life. It's sure. their lifestyle. I mean, their lives revolve around drink. Your recollection of life is very different than other people who witness the same events.
Yeah.
So if this woman has an alcohol problem, not diagnosing her, I can't do that, but it sure sounds like there's something going on there. Your vision of reality is quite different than what really happened in everyday events.
Well,
who knows? Was she shit-faced drunk the night before doing these documentaries? I don't know.
I wonder if she was drunk during some of the documentaries.
Well, shit, I would
honestly
be, but
there was a couple clips in there where I'm like, I couldn't tell you which ones off the top of my head, but when I was putting it together, I'm like, it seems like she just had a couple. I could
she
be
could
completely
be a functional
wrong.
Alcoholic. I've known quite a few. It's amazing what they can do.
I wouldn't be surprised, but you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying factually, but I don't know. I would not be surprised.
Right.
I
wouldn't either.
But what is, you know, but you go deeper, and again, that then it plays even more into how I feel, where it seems like there's just this uber narcissism going on. What is she drinking for? What is she covering? Because narcissists are not happy people at the end of the day. They are they have to live with themselves, and they are constantly tormented by themselves. That's why they act the way they act. That's why they have to self-aggrandized and this sense of grandeur when it's not right. And they got to flip the script, so they're always the good one. They can't take accountability for anything. And that's just what we've seen here. The thing with his kids where, you know, you're fucking kids and complaining about, always basically trying to make John the bad guy. And he even says it in a text. He's sick of it.
Yeah.
Of being made the bad guy. And she's
no doubt
and
it was a volatile relationship.
And she's flipping it, in my opinion, to, oh, I'm just trying to be good and be closer with the kids and this or that. I bet it's the exact fucking opposite. I bet it is the opposite of that. And that, because that's Karen's story of it. And she's going to portray herself as, this loving, wonderful person who was just getting so close with the kids and this and that. Mm-hmm. Really? I mean, it sure doesn't sound like it.
Well, and did you find it curious too that Mrs. O'Keefe, when referring to Karen being there, her, and this might just be her now saying this, but what was she doing here?
Yeah.
So was there some turmoil in this relationship and the parents didn't care for Karen because of things that had been going on? We don't know.
Well, I believe it's been said that the family, at least I think his brother knew that he was, or his sister, brother, because the brother is a surviving one, that I believe there's some sort of exchange. I could be wrong, but I believe there's something where he was, you know, telling, expressing at least to him that he wanted to end this relationship with Karen and had to get out of it. And I think he was probably trying to find his way. Yeah. And he was trying to find his way, trying to navigate it out. You know, it looks like a great murder story. If that rage caused her to do this and purposely kill him, I just don't think that's what the case is.
No,
I don't think she's a lovely human being. I think she's not. She's kind of disgusting, especially that personality type. They're spooky. They're scary. I can't diagnose her, but, you know, from everything I've seen, not a woman you'd want to be hanging around because they're capable.
It takes a special kind of person to deal with a personality like that.
They're capable of anything. They really are. And they can bend the truth in ways you wouldn't even see possible. And then they'll write it off and just try to convince you that that way is right. So here we go. Karen Reid, trial number two. And we'll keep you updated with testimony and clips and the court, everything, all the courtroom audio. We got it for you on the podcast channels. It's there for you. There's even a Karen Reid trial channel. It's the trial of Karen Reid. Wherever you get podcasts, if you just want to follow that case alone. And of course, if you're on YouTube, press subscribe and let us know what you think in the comments section.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.